Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, Mr. Dave Martino.
I'm here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, yeah. That's the first episode back, I guess, after the 3-week hiatus.
That's right. Don't call it a comeback.
See, people, is it the bad thing? Is people don't know what you're talking about.
No,
now.
They don't. That,
that's not very 90s of you, right? and it's still hard to believe that the 90s is like 30 years ago.
I know. Well, he was on New Year's Rockin' Eve, and I did turn that on for a minute, too.
Oh, a minute. You were watching the whole thing. You were laying on the couch with the cat.
Cat, exactly.
Come on, tell the truth.
No, we watched The Shining for part of it. Because we wanted an upbeat movie to ring in the New Year's.
An upbeat movie is The Shining.
Yeah, The Shining, yeah.
How do you find that upbeat?
I'm being a little sarcastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is your wife doing? Like, she's kind of like got a little light on watching you, right?
Oh, well, honey, she's a big horror movie fan, you know.
Oh, maybe you should be watching her.
Yeah, I know.
She's learning how to kill the husband.
Yeah, it's scary.
She take out any insurance policies on you lately?
Not that I know of, but, you know, probably secret insurance policies.
And so what are you going to do? Do you see that? I sent you that with Best Buy dropping the, they're not going to be doing any more DVDs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's still boutique companies that are doing, you know, DVD, Blu-ray, 4K. And, you know, Walmart and Amazon are still in the business, at least for now. So I don't think discs are going anywhere yet.
To me, it seems like the beginning of the end.
Well, that's...
But then I say that with everything, don't I? I guess I can kind of complain. Well, I just sort of think that's kind of like when a big chain like that stops, then how long before others do?
Yeah, well, we'll see. And, you know, they didn't have a big market anyway. For the discs,
yeah.
But you know, I you know much prefer older films anyway. So and most of that, a lot of that has been put to disc. So
yeah, well,
I'm sure I can still get them.
Well, yeah, you get them at the dollar store.
But that's true too. Hey, we may luck out, and maybe they'll send some good stuff to the dollar store.
You know, well, that's fine. Right.
Ship it right down there. $1.25. Hey, I'm all for it.
Well, they got a couple hundred stores. That's a lot of merchandise to get rid
of.
Yeah. Right? Or they're going to sell it cheap to get rid of it.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
You know? Yeah, you'll be that guy waiting out the night before.
That's right. I'll be camping out.
Just that, you know, you're the only one there.
Yeah, exactly.
Cough will come along and say, move along, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be calling you for bail money.
Yeah.
But I'm reading. Fill me out.
Yeah. 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 Don't wake me up. Okay. Do it. Don't do it in the middle of the night.
Night, right.
Well, speaking of bail, it looks like we've got a lawyer on, right, who's written books, I believe. Like, you know, this is really interesting. So now this is book two of a series, it looks like. It's a Southern California mystery. Yeah, two-book series. And this one is called Murderous Means. It's a Southern California mystery. So people look out. So, Leah Sedaris, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for hosting me today, Al.
So, Leah, what would bring you into the world of writing if you got your law degree, too, right? Isn't that right?
Yes.
Am I right in saying that? So you go to school, hard work, get into the legal profession, and then you're writing books?
Well, first I have a correction to make. This is actually book six in my series.
Oh,
yes.
Well, I only see two on the...
Yeah, Amazon has made an error, and we're still trying to correct it between my publisher and I. It's been a while, but this is actually book six.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and as to writing, I've wanted to write ever since I could read. I wanted to make people feel how I feel when I'm reading a wonderful book. I think it all started with Where the Wild Things Are, total escape into a whole different world. And since that time, I've wanted to write. When I was 10, I wrote a poem and I won an honorable mention. I think it was from a Calls magazine. And after that, you know, I had the bug, but I could never quite do it because my family insisted I go after a vocation that was more steady and more likely to be able to support me, which is what I did by becoming a lawyer. But even my first job was with a movie studio, and the reason I did that was because of the creativity that I knew would be there. And maybe someday I could write for the studio. Anyway, the thought was always in the back of my mind until it finally reached fruition many decades later. But I'm so glad I did, because I had no idea what I was missing until I entered this writer's life. It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, you know, it is an interesting life, but I always wonder how someone gains that confidence. Like, if you're not, you know, at school writing for the school play, and then you're writing articles and you work into the newspaper and all that stuff and magazines and stuff. How do you gain the confidence to go, okay, I'm going to write this, because it's a fictional story, comes from your mind, you write it. Then you have the nerve to send it to a publisher or send it out. Like, how do you develop that? How did it happen for you?
I had two confidence boosters early on. The first one was I won a scholarship to attend the San Francisco Writers Conference based on a chapter I'd submitted of a work in progress that was historical fiction. And I was shocked when an agent called me and invited me. And I went, and once I got there, everyone approached me like I could write. They all believed that I could write. Agents wanted to see my work. The problem was I had nothing written at the time, but that gave me the first boost of confidence to go forward and write what I really wanted to write, which was a mystery, because that's what I love to read. So I wrote for the next almost 2 years before the book was published, and along the way, I submitted my manuscript for another award, a scholarship award through the Mystery Writers of America, and I was one of two national winners. Another huge boost of confidence that I could do this. And somehow I did. It's a miracle every time. I don't know how it happens, but somehow I reached the end and it all makes sense, for which I'm quite grateful.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, you have to be happy. You know, how do you deal with this world but nowadays? I always kind of, both Dave and I have had books published, so I know that, and plus being in the public on radio, you get a lot of feedback, I'll call it, but you know, in this world, it's pretty judgmental and can be pretty negative at times. Are you looking at reviews? Do you think about what people are going to say or do, or do you avoid that?
Well, I recently read, or I heard Janet Ivanovich speak about reviews. I love her work because it's so simple. It's funny and it's a mystery adventure. They're so entertaining all around. And she said, and she has thousands of reviews on Amazon, that she doesn't look at them because they're so brutal. So I don't know if this brutal world ever will stop being so. So to me, the best thing is just not to pay any attention to them. I mean, even J.K. Rowling with her first Harry Potter got a brutal review in the New York Times. It didn't stop her. I think as long as we know that we've done our very best, and I do feel that way once the book is out of my hands, there's nothing I could do any better. You know, it happens. I mean, people are going to criticize you no matter what you do sometimes, but it's not my problem. I've done the best I could possibly do, and I don't know where they're coming from. So I don't really pay attention to it. I am, however, very, very grateful for my wonderful reviews. I just got one from Kirkus for my new book, and it was fabulous, and I was very grateful for that.
Yeah, it's not worth getting caught up in all that anyway, personally. I mean, I've been there and done that where I was, and now it's kind of, it's not really worth it. It kind of takes the attention away from writing, you know?
It takes away from your joy, and nothing should do that.
No, of course not. Now, let's see, like what this series, it's a PI sort of series and that. So your main character, I guess, is Corey Locke. Is
yes.
that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So where does Corey come from? And I should say, who is Corey to you?
Well, she is loosely based on my former life working as a movie studio attorney, except without the homicides. So when I first started writing the initial draft, she was me. I mean, it was just a blueprint of my life, but I kept dozing off because it was so tedious. I came back and changed her to an entirely different person. I was very shy and timid when I was 26 years old. That was when I got my first studio job. Everything intimidated me, the largesse of everything, the personalities, the expectations, the very high energy. But she's different, very different than me. She can take it all because she's the daughter of a very well-known L.A. private investigator. And together they cracked a few high-profile cases. So she knows what she's doing, and really nothing fazes her. I should say very little fazes her. And so I just went from there. I made her everything I was not. I put in a couple of situations that I had been confronted with and wished I had handled differently. And so it's kind of like a catharsis for me, creating this character. In the first book in the series, Murder and Other Unnatural Disasters, she shies away from investigating because of what happened to her father. I'm not going to say what it is, but something happens to him. And she is focused on trying to be the best lawyer she can. And her mother's totally for that, for the same reason, what happened to her ex-husband, actually. But, you know, when you have a passion for something, you can't be stopped. You have to go after that thing. And she finds hunting down criminals thrilling. She loves taking risks, and she's got the skills, so why not? And I just went from there.
I have to ask then, what's your relationship with Corey? Like, do you hear her, see her? Do you see it like a movie? Do you hear voices? Like, where's your common ground with Corey?
I definitely hear her voice in my head. I know her character strengths and flaws. She has I've watched her grow from book one through book six. And I can hear her voice very loud and clear in my head. I know what she'll tolerate and what she won't. I know where she draws the line, but I also know where she crosses the line, which she does in every installment. So I'd say I know her very well. She's perhaps me 2.0 or beyond if I had those skills. So I've learned a lot actually from writing this book about myself through this character. I never thought fiction could do that for me, but it has.
Well, if she keeps crossing the line, she's like Dave.
Is that right. True, Dave?
No comment. Well, how much liberty do you have to take with what a PI can do in your novels? I know, like, in real life, PIs can't always, like, interfere with a criminal investigation, but that's not always true of the fictional PIs. They get to do more to serve the story. How do you balance that?
Well, I don't ever want to present the law enforcement in a bad light. So I'm careful not to do that. And for the most part, she does try to work with them, but, you know, she's a young female, and she doesn't look like she, you know, can handle very much. So they usually kind of push her aside and don't take her seriously. And she, because of that, she's able to do things that maybe they would never suspect her of doing. But as the series progresses, she gains a reputation of her own. So things change a little bit, and the law enforcement or other PIs, they kind of challenge her, like, oh, you want to try this? Yeah, sure, you're going to have to get past me first. So she has challenges throughout the series, but again, I really enjoy watching her grow and overcome them all. She hasn't overcome them all, but she's working on it.
When you say you learn a lot about yourself, I think that a lot of good writers will do that, because you're putting a lot of your own, let's say, situations or feelings or thoughts into the character, into the book, right, and what yes. they go through and that stuff. So do you ever feel a little bit vulnerable when you kind of put that down on paper and write it and people can read it?
Well, you are so right on, Al, because we do pour a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into our books. I mean, it's everything there exposed. But I don't know that I'm doing it until after the fact. So it wasn't until the third book that I realized something that she, a theme that was continuing was something that I was feeling too. And also, when she does take down the culprit, which she does sometimes with great gusto, I realized after the fact that, you know, that was a relief for me, because it helped me get something off my chest indirectly. So that's kind of like therapy, which is wonderful, because and unexpected, and also helped me to learn something about myself. You know, this was troubling me, and this is how I'm dealing with it, by letting my heroine handle it.
Letting your heroine, I mean, yeah, I hope people don't think it's the drug you're talking about.
You know, I never thought of it that way, but it's not. Mine has an E at the end.
Yeah. So when you put in, like, when you're writing this, there's going to be some, you know, there's murder involved. It's kind of it's a killer PI sort of book and stuff like that. Are you conscious about how you write that sort of scene, or how you do the action in a book like this?
Yes. First, I love action scenes. I'm all about them. I try to end each of my chapters on a cliffhanger with some action, because it keeps the story moving forward. But I have no violence on the page. Everything happens off the page. And even though every single one of the titles has murder in it, there's not always a murder. For example, number 4 is slightly murderous intent, because it's about a shooter who can't make up his mind whether he actually wants to kill his target or not, so he keeps missing. And in book number 3, Murder Double or Nothing, we're not even sure there was a murder, just like Murderous Means too. Corey's hired by a dysfunctional family to prove that the matriarch was killed when she was found having died peacefully in her sleep, and all they have to go on is a half-baked psychic vision. So is there a murder or not? Because of I think I mentioned to you a little bit of a comical, you know, bend to my books. There isn't necessarily a murder in every single one.
Right. So you kind of take, I don't know, is it sarcastic or cynical, or you sort of have, what kind of view do you put into the feeling of the book?
Oh, you know, I sometimes stop reading books because I don't like their tone. So I hope that mine has a very lighthearted tone, despite the fact that it's a mystery and there's some crime involved. But I try to keep it as lighthearted as I can. Of course, if there's a scene where she's discovering a body, well, that particular scene may not be quite as lighthearted as I would like, but then I will insert some sarcasm or something, some comment she'll make about the body she's found, or something like that, just to keep it light and to keep it going in the same tone. I don't want anybody that reads my books to feel down after they've read it. I want them to feel up. I want them to feel like they've been on an adventure that was fun and exciting. So that's how I look at it.
Well, you put a lot of snappy dialogue and a lot of humor into your books. And I'm just wondering, just like stand-up comedy, there's a need for timing when telling jokes. You know, there's a certain, like, timing for humor. Do you feel that there is a comedic timing, I guess, of sorts to be humorous in prose fiction?
Oh, yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, it's very much like stand-up fiction. And when I write the first draft, which is quite dreadful, typically, There is no humor in it at all. My characters are all stick characters. They have no basis to them at all. But as I go along and revise, that's when I insert humor wherever I think that it can fit in nicely. And again, timing is everything, because I am sensitive to, you know, times when humor just won't work. But yeah, I watch a lot of comedy. I love comedy TV shows. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar, Al, being in Canada, or no, being familiar with Canada, the TV show Psych. The comic timing, I thought, and that was brilliant.
Well, you know, I was wondering too, you know, you mentioned you kind of referred to your characters when you first put them on the page as like stick figures.
Yes.
Maybe with no agency of their own. And I've heard of at least one other author that does this. And I'm wondering if it's to keep control of the character so that they don't go off and do things to confound the plot.
No, it's just to keep the plot moving. Because I have a tendency to stop and want to edit everything constantly. And, you know, if I do that, I'll never finish the book. So I don't. I keep the plot moving. That's why I keep them stick figures. Once in a while, however, a scene will call to me, and I will flesh it out some more. And I have a little hack, too, to keep me moving forward, because I don't know about you when you're writing, but when I write, I've got this, whatever the opposite of a muse is, but something sitting on my shoulder telling me, this is so terrible, no one's going to want to read it. I don't even know how you wrote the last book or the last book. So what I do is I give myself the liberty of going back to the first chapter and only the first chapter and editing it every time before I start. So it keeps getting better and better. And as every time I read it, I think, you know, this isn't half bad. If you can write the whole book like this, it'll be perfect. Just keep on keeping on. So that's how I motivate myself to continue going forward when I think it might not be great with these stick figures that are populating my books. That's the way I work. It's not so much that the characters will overrule or, you know, take over what's going on, but I just want to move forward and reach those two beautiful words, the end.
Well, that's just, that's the second page in my book.
I wish.
Yeah. Well, so, and the bad guys. So how do you write an evil character or a bad character? Do you take that after someone you know, someone you've worked with? We'll take names and phone numbers and we'll call them.
I like to distance myself in my fiction from my reality. That's why I didn't start writing these books that were based on my life when I was 26 for at least a couple of decades. I don't want to remember how it was. I want to let my imagination run with it. And as for the villains, I don't know who the villain is necessarily when I write, because I do write by the seat of my pants. Although I do have somewhat of an outline, especially for this last one, Murderous Means. So I'm often surprised when I reach the end, especially in the first book. I was stunned when I discovered who did it. You know, I had to gasp and say, really? I didn't see that coming. So after those first few drafts, I go back and I try to make it consistent without letting it be known to the reader who the actual villain is. But I do go in and add in a few tiny details that I guess a very astute reader could pick up. But I'm hoping, I mean, so far in Murderous Means, the reaction has been, oh, I had no idea that it was that person. So I don't even know, Al, necessarily who it's going to be.
Yeah. Well, and so do they let you out of your house when you hear all these voices and they're telling you to do all these things and you don't know who the murderer is?
I don't know if it quite works that way for me, because I just keep, because I, again, I'm mostly in my heroine's head. That's Corey's head, not the drug.
Yeah, I was going to say, throw heroin in there too.
I've got to watch how I use that word now, but I'm in her head, so I'm trying to see everything from her viewpoint. So she's constantly thinking, could it be this person? She has a list of suspects in her head, but even in this last book, I had a different culprit at the end. And then I realized, you know, this just doesn't work. It didn't sit well with me. Intuitively, I knew it couldn't be this person. So we, Corey and I, had to go back and fix those last few paragraphs in order to uncover the real culprit. So we just go with, I go with the flow. I go with whatever I think will work somewhat intuitively and logically as well.
Well, is it hard creating a mystery when you're writing by the seat of your pants? Do you find that your first draft is kind of like your outline?
Probably, because I tried writing my second book, Murder Gone Missing, with an outline. I felt like such a professional. I wrote the outline. I'm going to stick to this. I'm going to be like a real writer. But I started and I just could not do it. I didn't want to know what happened. And I don't want to know. I like to be surprised. Like, even in the very beginning of Murderous Mean, something happens to her that I didn't expect. It was a mishap that caused her to behave perhaps a little bit differently. And it took her by surprise too. So I like not knowing the little details and even the generalities of what's going to happen. I like the surprise aspect for me, because I feel if I'm surprised, my readers will be as well.
I'm the same way.
I think a lot of authors are. You'd be surprised at how many big names write that way. I think it was Lee Child I read. He likes to write. He can only write by the seat of his pants. I think there are quite a few.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, you know, I think if I wore pants, I would be that. But
I won't ask.
Well, get the sensors.
Yeah, get the sensors. But, you know, when you put all your time into to writing one of the books and...
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The characters and the outcome, and you get it all finished into the publisher, all the edits done. Because you put so much of yourself and you relate to the characters and all of that goes into the book, how do you think writing one of these changes you yourself?
Wow. Well, first of all, again, it's a miracle every time it's finished. Because in the beginning, it's like, oh, how am I going to get through this? And just to digress a little bit with this latest book, Murderous Means, I reached about 60,000 words and I found I couldn't continue. I just couldn't go anywhere. It was going so slowly. Yeah, I didn't know what was wrong. I wasn't motivated. That had never happened before. Maybe it was, yeah, I don't know. But in any case, what I did was I stopped writing it for about a month and a half and I turned to writing another book in a completely different genre. And I started feeling excited again. That came very smoothly. When I was about 30,000 words in, I was motivated once again to return to Murderous Means and finish it. And I don't know, again, what happened, why I lost my mojo maybe for a little while, what caused that. Maybe it was pressures of, you know, love life. But it turned out fine. And I don't think anybody that reads my books can quite figure out where I get these characters from, because they're not real. But you had mentioned, Dave, that you're a fan of old movies. By old movies, do you mean the 70s, 80s, 90s, or do you mean prior, like 30s and 40s and 50s?
Well, my favorites are 70s and 80s.
Okay. Because a lot of my characters, actually, I base on actors, on older actors, maybe from the 70s, maybe from the 30s or 40s. Mm. All of a sudden, in this book, in Murderous Means, there's the sister of the and then the dysfunctional Means family who hires Corey. I have no idea where this came from, but I suddenly heard actress Jean Arthur's voice in my head. I don't know if you know who she is, but she did some Frank Capra films.
Okay.
She did Shane with Alan Ladd. I'm a big fan of the Golden Age of Hollywood. But in any case, So every time I wrote that character, somehow Jean Arthur, and I, of course, I didn't know her, and I've seen maybe five or six of her movies, but that's who I heard. That's who I saw. And that made it really easy to write that character.
Wow. So you're seeing images and hearing voices.
Yeah. Again, there's no heroine involved except, you know, Corey.
Sure. Yeah. No, well, hey, the last thing I do is judge.
You know? Thank you.
And I like the old movies myself. I'm really into the old. I listen to a lot of the old radio shows.
Yeah, right same now, here. Right I love now. Suspense or suspense.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that's sort of what I really like that sort of thing. And plus, it puts me in the mood if I'm writing and stuff, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I like being in that. You pick up a lot of phrases, too, and a lot of terms people use at different times, too, which you can kind of incorporate, I think, you know. What do you hope when someone picks up one of your books, takes it home, reads it at the end of the day, what do you hope they take away from that book?
Well, I know what I hope I take away from a book when I pick it up. I hope to completely disappear so that you can't see me. You just see a book that's open and pages turning. So I hope they can completely lose themselves in what's going on and leave the world for a little bit and just have some fun. When I write, I feel like the readers are sitting next to me and I'm telling them a story that makes them forget everything else. You know, time flies. We're not aware of that. We don't know where we are anymore. We're just having a blast inside the pages. So if someone reads and is thoroughly entertained, I cannot ask for more than that.
Do you write the area, like Southern California, you call it mystery and stuff. So are you making Southern California kind of like a character and is that how you write the location?
I do. At least I hope I do. I know Southern California well. I was born and raised there, and I still live in Southern California. And so I have my heroine revisit all of my own haunts. But where I would go to, for example, Balboa Island in Newport Beach, nothing would happen except we'd have a lovely ride across the ferry and across the small bay, go to the other side. She takes the same ferry. She ends up in the bay, and we don't even know if she's going to make it to the other side. So I love taking places that I know well and throwing her in and watching what happens.
Well, make her suffer.
Exactly. Well, not for long, but again, she's a thrill seeker and she loves taking risks. So this is what she lives for. I'm just giving her what she wants.
Right. Yeah, sure. So your extra characters, where do you take those from? Is it someone you've seen on a bus or in a coffee shop or?
Well, it could be because, for example, in my first book, again, Murder and Other Unnatural Disasters, there's a subplot involving a professional basketball star who wants her to find his missing lucky charm. And I was on the golf course with my junior golfer one day, and it was a weekend where Michael Jordan, the superstar basketball player, was there for a golf camp that he was hosting. And so he had a bunch of his buddies there as well. I'm sorry, it was a basketball camp, not a golf camp, but they were golfing together afterwards. In any case, we were on hole one, and a basketball player approaches us. I didn't know who he was. My son did. It was Alonzo Mourning. And he asked us so nicely, so sweetly, if he could play ahead of us, you know, move forward. And we said, sure. And I thought, you know, I'm going to throw him in my next book. And he seemed, just on the surface, I never met him, talked to him for only a minute or two. He seemed like a cat lover. So I threw him into my first book with a cat. And then, you know, that's all I can say. But he became a secondary character. And also Corey has sidekicks. He has three in each book. And they kind of change. Book five, all of a sudden a new sidekick comes in. But in the first book, she had no sidekicks because she thought she could do everything on her own. She didn't know how to accept help. It was a gradual process for her. So these sidekicks are all based, maybe loosely based on people I've had just brushes with in real life. One of them is loosely based on Queen Latifah, just because one day I saw her in her Rolls Royce, a convertible, driving. She looked like she was having a blast. And I thought it would be fun to hang out with her for a while. So I thought I'd do a character, again, loosely based on her. So they come from everywhere, Al. You never know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, do you ever kill off people you know in these, use them as bad characters?
I can't say that I haven't thought about it quite strongly at times, but okay. I don't. Because I do have to, I like to distance myself from my reality. I don't think I would have a clear perspective of what I and how I should write if I did use real people. No, but it's, again, I have thought about it.
Of course. Some names?
We won't tell anyone.
Yeah, we won't tell a person.
I've heard you're very trustworthy, so.
Of course. It might be on the radio, but we won't tell anyone directly. I noticed you've also, you've written about a half-baked psychic in this vision. Is that taken from a real-life event as well, or do you sort of have, like, any sort of paranormal history?
Well, you write true crime, right, Al?
That's what sells.
Yeah. I actually take the seeds of my ideas from true crime. And I happened to read about the matriarch of a family passing away. She was in her 70s, and, you know, she died peacefully in her sleep. And then I was on a podcast where the host told me that her sister, about the same age, had passed away, and she was certain there was foul play involved. So that's how I got the idea for this book. And then for the psychic, I happened to be reading articles about how psychics can or persuade people to believe in their visions and how often they take people for a ride. So that's when I decided, well, let's have Corey deal with a psychic. Is she the real deal? And Corey immediately says no. She says, I'm going to solve this case by proving that the psychic is a fraud and it'll be a done deal. We'll get paid and we can move on. But it's not so easy as she thinks it's going to be. And there's some more complications that come into play. So there is a half-baked vision from a psychic. And that's what starts the ball rolling. But it goes in a different direction than Corey thinks it will go.
Well, you know, it's always good to figure out where this stuff comes from. So where do you see yourself going now? Like, what do you got going on next?
Well, I have book number 7 in the series, which I've just started. You never know where it's going to go, because I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but not oftentimes, but twice in this series anyway, books 2 and 5, I believe, I went back and threw out the first chapter and wrote it all over again, or I made it the second chapter instead. Yep. So anyway, I'm working on book 7, and in book 7, I'm hoping, I'm not sure if this is going to be the case yet, but I'll give you a scoop, and that is, we don't quite know what happened to Corey's father and who did it. So hopefully that will be answered in book 7.
With 7 books in a series, how do you keep track of your continuity? Do you have a series Bible? Are there tools or systems that you use?
After I write the first draft for each one, I go back and I summarize each chapter. I kind of say, with a timeline as well. Otherwise I'll get mixed up, because everything happens within a week in each of these books. I don't like to prolong it. One happened over a Memorial Day weekend. But so that's how I go back. But, you know, I've never really had to. I guess I have, but not very often do I go back, because I do have a good sense of what's happened before. Or maybe I'm kidding myself, because I saw an interview with Stephen King once many, many years ago. He was being interviewed on the radio, and a caller called in and said, Stephen, you had a piano in a chapter that suddenly just disappeared. It was never mentioned again. What was up with that? And there was dead silence. So I don't know. Yeah. It was like he was probably thinking, what was my editor doing? They didn't catch that? So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, someone got fired.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so as much as you try to have continuity, even with a Bible, I mean, there are times when you're going to miss things.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, well, sure, you know, can happen. Do you kind of know ahead of time what's going to happen then at all? Like, because, you know, with doing a 7th book, when you were back doing book 1 originally, way back when you started that, Did you kind of think that this was going to be 6, 7, 10 books or anything like that?
No. I was focusing on the one. I hadn't signed for more than one book either. I wanted to see if I could actually do one. And when I did, I thought, you know, there's something I could do with this. And my publisher, my first publisher, was interested. I actually switched publishers. Book one is with one publisher, and books 2 through 7 will be with a different one. Because my first publisher's focus was on romance novels, and this does not, it has some romance, but not very much. And I wanted someone whose focus was on mystery novels. That's the only reason why I switched publishers. But I had no idea that I would be right where I am right now. So I don't know how that happened, but I'm so glad that it did.
Yeah. No, it's a good thing. Do you have any problems trying to keep it fresh, like each book? Like whenever I talk to people that do series and stuff like that, is it hard to kind of come up with ideas, or does it just happen?
I haven't had any problem keeping it fresh, except that as I mentioned, when with Murderous Means, all of a sudden after 60,000 words, I came to a halt and I couldn't figure out why, because I had the idea was even there. I knew, but I think I, again, I don't know what happened, but I just switched direction and I came back and everything worked out fine. So if I should have a problem with ideas, of course, I can always turn to true crime, because there so many things are happening. So I don't think I'll have a problem with an idea.
Yeah, that's the drive-through.
Yeah.
True crime.
Yep.
Just turn to crime.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, there's plenty to work with there.
Yeah, there sure is. Sure.
Well, that's fantastic. That's amazing. So now, listen, are you doing social media? Do you have a website? Do you have all that sort of good stuff going on right now? And do you have, do you like to interact with the readers?
Oh, I love interacting with readers. I love hearing from them when they email me, tell me different things. One, I remember a memorable one was concerned that Corey's love interest would change to one of her sidekicks. And he hadn't even finished that particular book yet. I said, please hang in there and just watch. I mean, there has to be conflict in these books, so just hang in there and everything will be okay. But yes, I'm all over social media. My name's kind of unique, so I'm not hard to find on Facebook. I have my website, my namesake website, Instagram, X. Yeah, I'm out there.
Okay, great. And your website address is?
LitaSedaris.com.
Well, that's real easy. And of course, now we're going to have all of that up on our website too, so people can find it easily with
Thank
one
you.
Click. And then they can just hunt you down and send you bad emails.
I'm the hunter, Al. Nobody
oh, you're the hunter.
Hunting me down. My character's the hunter.
Well, there you go. You know, I have to ask. So with the weird times and all that stuff, were you writing some of these books over COVID, and do you think it affected any of the writing you did?
You know, I was writing. I don't think it affected my writing, but something really, really wonderful happened because of this pandemic. And that is when I had my book number 5, Gambling with Murder, set for release in, I think it was September, October of 2020. You know, the bookstores shut down, so I couldn't go to my usual sources and market my books. And that was a little bit disheartening. So I put out a call during one of our publisher meetings via Zoom, and I asked whether there were any other authors that had books coming out that fall who would want to partner up with me to do Zoom promo. And much to my surprise, out of like hundreds of authors, only 3 responded. Only 3. And they all had books coming out about the same time as me. And we banded together. We had the same publisher. We all do mysteries. We banded together, and ever since then, we have another website that we do together. We were founders of sleuthsandsidekicks.com. We teach writers workshops together. Where our next one will be in a London-based workshop. And we traveled from coast to coast, because 2 of them are in New York, one's in Chicago, and here I am on the West Coast. We did a lot of marketing together, and we've become wonderful friends since then. I mean, I never could have predicted something so marvelous would come out of the pandemic, you know, in my writing life.
Oh, yeah.
So again, we're on sleuthsandsidekicks.com if anybody would like to look that up. It's a reader-oriented website with articles that are reader oriented about how to overcome everything from public speaking to interviews with authors that we're fans of, like Rhys Bowen or Martin Edwards. I mean, we've got everything on there, and we've become good friends as a result of it.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing. I think that there's a lot of good in social media as well as the bad out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, you know, there's always something good comes from bad things, usually.
Right. Yeah, you know, silver linings. Silver linings.
Yeah, I might always see it at the time, but, you know, there's good things. So, well, this is it. We appreciate you being on the show.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much, Al and Dave. I loved being here.
And you're okay. So in your newest book, Murderous Means, it's a Southern California mystery. And it's book 6, not 2, 6. So don't Amazon. Do not believe in Amazon. No, it's book 6.
Thank
you. Just so people know. So Lita Sedaris, thank you for being here.
Thanks again very much.
Thanks, Lita.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.